driving. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
Got it.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Friends, enemies, and anyone in between, welcome back to another edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND. I'm Leo Sauter, your sports director here, and we are back to our normal formation here, award-winning formation here on the Red Zone.
Oh, yeah.
I'm joined by my regular co-host and WZND's production director, Joey Dwyer.
How's it going, gentlemen? Good to be back
it's
in the stew.
Great,
good
Joey.
To be back in the stew. We just talked about it. Feeling almost too loose for the show tonight, but we'll keep it in control.
We will. We'll keep it definitely a little bit under control right now.
Joey just ate a bag full of discounted Halloween candy, and so he's on a bit of a sugar kick right now, so we might just have to put him in timeout.
Whoever put the pixie sticks in my office, that was a mistake.
Oh,
I'm off the walls right now.
And the voice you just heard, who is back from his absence after last week, is Joe Kennedy, our producer here, and we're happy to have him back because we come back with a little bit of good news. We finally heard back from the CBI, our College Broadcasters Incorporated, about the awards we were nominated for. We talked about this on a previous show that we were up not once but twice for best sportscast in the nation, and we got second and third. So we're right there. We're on the podium. Not the best, but not fourth place. So I think we did all right. We're the in-betweens here.
It just was a little disappointing, I would have to say, though. You know, you came in with two submissions coming in, and just thinking you're going to get there, and listening to maybe some of the other competition, you kind of had a good feeling about it. Not going to lie, but I guess was not in favor. But hey, we got second, third.
And this is,
you can't complain about
and
that.
And CBI is not to pump our own tires, but that is a super cool thing.
Yeah.
It's a nationwide competition. Like, there are over 150 applicants. And for us to have both of our submissions in the top four to be finalists, that was a really cool experience. Also, big shout out to KTSW's Bobcat Radio. They took the win. We gave them a little listen. They're on, you can find them online, ktsw.texasstate.edu. They're on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 11 to noon. So check them out. They got some good stuff.
You're not listening to Red Zone, listen to them. But I think it's also worth mentioning WZND did have some other award winners. Big shout out to Maritza Navarro-Lopez, Anna Marie Schutt, and the rest of the Bird's Eye View team for their first place in the Nation Award. That's a huge accomplishment. Mitch Guad's got a fourth place in a reporting one, and Maritza also picked up another one for a reporting bit she did. So it's just really impressive to see so many people from WZND, from Illinois State, get that recognition. And I'm excited to see what we can do now with another semester together. Hopefully, maybe this time next year, we'll find out that the Red Zone did get that first place.
I think we're building something special right now. I mean, that was only from our first semester, so things only get better. So we have this semester and a whole other one, hopefully, probably.
It's the age-old question, though. Did we peak too early? Are the wheels going to fall off the bus?
They will not fall off. I
think the egos
that.
Are already starting listening. To get a little big here, so that might be a problem.
That's true. Joe is demanding to have a writer before every show now.
We should have stopped the count before when we had the lead. That's what we should have done. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, Joe does have an intern now. It's kind of like Comerica Enterprises here, where he's got somebody doing his work. A little go-getter, if you will. But
definitely.
Maybe now we'll get back to some serious business here, because we got a full great show coming up tonight. We're going to be talking about some Redbird athletics, because Redbird volleyball has been on a tear lately. Hit some Redbird football, because they're back in town. Then after the break, we're going to hit some MLB baseball, because the trophy was given out this week.
We haven't talked about it in a while. Yeah.
And we really haven't. And then after that, Cameron Kelly's going to come on the show to talk about a more serious topic, one we hit on last November, as the payment of college athletes, the name, image, likeness, some money moves there, and then we'll round things out with the pick six. So let's get into it, guys, because Redbird volleyball has been on an absolute heater here. They've won seven straight sets dating back to October 18th, and in those seven straight matches dating back to October 18th, and in those seven straight matches, they've won 14 straight sets. So they are beating teams, and they are beating teams quick.
And you see the posts on social media all the time that explain very well like what the dynamic at ISU is right now. When people are just talking about, we are a volleyball school now.
Always have been.
And for good reason, too, because this team is unreal. And we talked about them coming into the season about how they lost a couple key players, and we didn't know if they were going to be able to fill those spots right away. And after the start to the season where they didn't play very well in the JMU Invitational, they got beat three times, and then the Flyer Raider Invitational as well, they had a couple bad losses. After that, they have looked extremely solid. Like, the only really bad loss has been to Drake at Drake, but other than that, they have been just on a tear.
It's also worth pointing out that I think the breakout star of this season has been maybe someone we weren't expecting. I think going into the season, we were talking about it's going to be Sarah Kushner's team and then who else is going to step up. But Tamara Otene has really risen to the occasion. She's top 20 in the nation in kills and has kind of been that person I don't think it was on any of our radars, and has just been taking the valley and to an extent the country by storm here.
And I think just Coach Johnson just talking things over, like when I was at the game a couple of weeks ago, it was at a point where against Loyola Chicago, that's kind of where all this started going on, because they beat those three teams at the point. We're in 1-2-3 in the conference, and they got those three wins in a row, and they've just kept adding on more. And it's looking at the rest of the schedule even, it's just like, I don't know a team that can really take them down. Besides, they're going to be traveling to Loyola Chicago and Bradley to end the season. So those are two of the best teams in the conference, Loyola 1, Bradley 3, ISU 2. So that closing of the season is really going to be important for them, because once you come into the conference tournament play, it's, I believe, at Redbird Arena 2 again this year.
Yep.
Correct? Yeah, so that's another great thing. Back on home court advantage, going to be only team being able to like sleep in their own beds and in their own places. Other teams have to travel here. And as Leo, you were saying, people stepping up, like Caitlin Leffler, too, a freshman, and she was hurt for a lot of the period of that time when they were losing games.
Yeah.
So getting her back and fully healthy has really helped this Redbird team.
I think you were talking about Coach Johnson. It's also worth mentioning that coming into Friday's match, she's sitting one shy of 100 career wins with Illinois State. So she's accomplishing some history while in the midst of one of the biggest win streaks that the program's seen.
And what a nice night for her to play in potentially her 100th win. As Friday night against Evansville, that's faculty and staff appreciation night, so that'll be a really cool experience, I'm sure, and the way that the Redbirds have been playing, I'm sure that will be a win. I'm going to knock on some wood, though. But yeah, five games left in the season. They are on such a hot streak right now. I seriously don't see a single team in the Valley who can even come close to competing right now.
And that's not really what we were expecting going into the year, because we talked about that's going to be a developing year, that they'll still be good, but probably not this good. I think obviously the expectation with the Redbird volleyball program is to win the conference, but I don't think we were expecting that they'd be the one seed going into the tournament automatically.
Yeah, and we kind of had, I mean, not doubt, but I remember at the beginning of the Red Zone this year, this semester, in like September, we were just talking, like, oh, this team, but also the injuries were piling up at the same time, and it takes time to develop as a team too, especially when you lose so much. And taking on Evansville too, it's kind of a revenge game coming up this weekend.
And I don't want to say that the injuries were a good thing to happen, because you never want to play without key players or have players get hurt, but being without Lund, Pronzinski, and Leffler, two experienced starters and then one new one in the setter role, which is an important role, I think that forced some other players to get uncomfortable, come in and play. Yeah. I mean, Cassie Jordan's someone that really comes to mind, that she really wasn't playing much early in the season, but has now become a pivotal role player for the team. I think those injuries kind of allowed other players to facilitate in, and just you were thrown into the deep end, but they developed because of it. And I think that wasn't something maybe the Redbirds anticipated, but has ended up happening as a positive result.
And Nicole Lund, like one of the best defensive players in front of the net in the entire Valley. Like at this point, she's top in the box. At least a week ago, she was top in the box in the conference in front of the net, box per set as well. And she's I think the tallest player on the team. The Redbirds go up against a lot of tall teams in Loyola Chicago and also in Bradley, who both teams are definitely a lot taller than them, but it comes down to athleticism. And Tamara Otene and Sarah Kushner, I don't know if I've seen anyone jump higher than them. It's intimidating to watch, even in those warm-ups.
And now moving into a Redbird team that maybe isn't coming on high of highs, is more in a low of lows. Redbird football. Well, this is where I don't understand Redbird football. So 2 weeks ago, they go to South Dakota, beat the Coyotes on the road, the net 15th-ranked South Dakota team, a big upset. Mm-hmm. And it looked like they were maybe going to get some momentum going, but then they drop a winnable game last week to Western Illinois. And it, that was one of the ones when we were talking about how does their season go as planned. That's a win you have to have, and they didn't get it this weekend. So now I'm kind of left just very confused about Redbird football. I don't know where you guys stand on the squad.
It's just looking at the squad, at least offense and defensively, like you lost some main big players though last year, but you also kept like a vast majority of your team and starters from the last season, and honestly expected a little bit more from the team, but sitting at 3-5 and 1-4 in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, which is weird because their one loss comes against the ranked team, like you were saying, Leo, and that loss against Western Michigan is definitely going to hurt, but this Northern Iowa team is a team that's just 3-2 right now in the conference, a little bit weaker than from before. So, I mean, I think it is a winnable game, but I'm not putting anything on the Redbirds to win the game. It's going to be they're going to have to be able to grind out the ball. Cole Mueller is going to have to attack that Northern Iowa defense, and that's a tough defense to run on.
It's just such a tough situation for the Birds right now because they're not going to make the postseason.
Oh, yeah. That's been gone secret, since, yeah, like,
that's
the second game.
Like, yeah, that's it. And after that South Dakota win, you were like, oh, well, maybe they've got the pieces in place. If they can string together a couple wins, they can be, like, the last four in. But no, after that loss to Western. So then you have to kind of look at the last three games you've got. You've got UNI, North Dakota, Indiana State, and use those games to kind of take stock of what you have. This is a young team, and there are just a couple of questions that you don't really know the answer to, like at the quarterback position, or there are some holes defensively where you've got a couple question marks. So you can kind of try guys, see what's working, and see what you really have to push for when push comes to shove during recruiting.
And I think you touched on it a little bit, Joey. The most frustrating thing, I think, about the Redbird football season this year has been that we still don't have the answer on who is the long-term quarterback for this program. Is it Jackson Waring? Is it Bryce Jefferson? They've kind of gone back and forth. Neither's really taken off with the job. I think that's the frustrating part. Is it outside of the realm of possibility to say that the quarterback of the future for Illinois State football, the quarterback that gets them back to the postseason, probably isn't in the program right now?
I would agree kind of with that. I mean, at least the quarterback that is going to, like, take the team to the playoffs. I mean, maybe Bryce Jefferson or Jackson Waring will get to the playoffs at some point in their career here, but I don't think they're going to be, like, a main factor for getting there,
right?
One of those, like, two. But if they do somehow bring in a transfer, recruits, don't really quite sure about that right now. Don't really know who they're bringing in for that. But the transfer portal has gone both good and bad for ISU.
I mean, Brady Davis came from Memphis. He was a transfer. I think that could be something
ball.
You do. I mean, we saw with North Dakota State, you go get an experienced transfer. If he's only around for 2 years, but it helps you get to the postseason, that could still be worth something. But we just don't know, because you don't have necessarily, if you get a recruit coming in, it's still going to be a couple years probably before he's ready. And so if you get a ready-made college quarterback to come in, that could probably help with this current roster.
And I mean, as long as we have been here at ISU, there hasn't been a quarterback with blow-me-away talent, right?
Right.
Like, even Brady Davis, when they were going and making deep playoff runs, it's not like it was on the shoulders of Brady Davis. It was a team that was very stout defensively and had the best running back in the FCS, right? So you don't necessarily need that top tier guy leading the offense, but you need a team that is solid around whoever you have. And right now the Redbirds just aren't quite there. And that does have a lot to do with the guys who left, right? And they had a lot of good guys who left, but it's a tough position when you have guys that leave and the other guys you have aren't quite at the point in their development where they can step in and replace those key players.
And for Northern Iowa too, also coming into this game, they got kind of a similar situation at their quarterback spot. Theo Day, redshirt sophomore, transferred from Michigan State. He came in, and they also had another redshirt freshman, so two younger guys, and both of them really haven't elevated their game to where, like, they had a really outstanding game at the quarterback spot. I mean, Northern Iowa, in my point of view at the moment, it's kind of just a better ISU team. Like, on defense, both of these teams kind of have linebackers that are kind of their heart and soul of their entire team, and that style of play that we've kind of both seen both of them do the same type of things. Like, both solid programs the past couple of years, both have beaten or gotten close to beating Power 5 schools and everything like that. And I think it could be something interesting. Last time out, Will Holt, the middle linebacker, he had a big game against UNI last year. I believe he had, like, an interception to keep things close. Redbirds did lose that one, I think 20-10. So, I mean, look to rebound from that one after coming off a pretty tough victory last year in the Dome at UNI.
And it should be interesting to see what happens in that one. We'll have the coverage here at 11:50 on Saturday. We'll actually have both volleyball matches as well this weekend. Those are Friday and Saturday at 5:50. Tons of sports coming on at WZND this weekend. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking some MLB, some taking things to the diamond, some MLB postseason. That's coming up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
That was Paul DeYoung, formerly of ISU Baseball, formerly of the Lexington Snipes, and currently of the St. Louis Cardinals, who are in the MLB. I don't know where I was going with that one.
Disappointing season, I guess.
Yeah, so. Disappointing season, and the MLB just wrapped things up, and it was a surprising champion, as if. Should probably know, the Atlanta Braves won. They beat the Houston Astros. Baseball is crazy. An 88-win team went on to win the World Series. And we just really were talking off air that we haven't hit baseball since the start of the postseason. So we missed tons, but now here we are finally doing the late recap.
I remember we talked. It was after Game 1 Thursday, I think, White Sox-Astros. Sox lost. We were talking about it and everything. Yep. We were talking about who we were going to predict was going to win, and I don't think at one time we talked about the Braves.
Probably not.
Like, barely any. We talked about the Astros getting out because, you know why. And then, but, like, no one at all predicted the Braves. Like, I remember ESPN, all 100 of their writers, one guy picked them, and it was their Atlanta Braves beat writer. So it's like, wow.
And the thing with the Braves going into the postseason is they were the team with the worst record out of any of the playoff teams.
Yeah.
In the worst division in baseball. And the Braves had 88 wins in the regular season. That is six more than the lowest win total to ever win the World Series. So this was not a team that was blowing doors off of people in the regular season, but they just got hot at the right time.
And that's what we talked about so many times with different guys that came on the show. Like, it's just all about, it doesn't matter how you do in the regular season. It's only you get to the postseason and flip that switch, you can do it. And I think this is a great example of it. But I think the thing that sticks out to me most about the Braves is because they lost Ronald Acuna, one of the best players in baseball. They lost him early in the year. But then they got aggressive at the deadline, and it was a lot of those moves that paid off in the World Series. Jorge Soler winning the World Series MVP. Jock Peterson. Eddie Rosario. Just, they went and aggressively made their team better when maybe some teams would have just folded up shop and not added to the team. I think that should give other teams more incentive to try to go for it at the deadline. Like, make your team better, because once you get in the postseason, who knows what can happen.
And, like, those aren't, like, huge names either. Like, you just need guys that are going to be able to, or at least have had past success in postseason, and also are just past success even just getting on base. Or, like, maybe a guy like Jorge Soler, he doesn't get on base a lot, but he hits for power. And he hit three home runs, and only three Braves of all time have done that in the World Series. All the rest, three of them, are in the Hall of Fame now. So, I mean, he's putting up numbers like those guys. Not a Hall of Famer, probably, but...
Glad you clarified that.
But, I mean, he's... Like, this Braves team, losing Charlie Morton, too, in Game 1. Like, they went through a lot. Ronald Acuna.
Yeah.
Like, they were without him. Like, that's so weird to
think. And that Charlie Morton thing, as devastating as the injury was to the team, it was also gave them something to kind of rally around, because that story was huge, talking about how Charlie Morton struck out the side or whatever.
On a broken leg.
Like,
talk about hype.
If you're in the locker room after that and you don't want to put your head through a concrete wall, like, what are you doing? That gets me amped up sitting here in the studio talking about it. I cannot imagine what his teammates were feeling about that.
And you don't see that a lot in, like, baseball, I feel like. People, they try to keep going, the pitcher gets hurt, then they throw a couple pitches like, oh, keep me out. And then he just had so much adrenaline, though. Game 1 of the World Series, he was like, all right, I'm at least finishing this inning. And then he comes back out and tries. Yeah. Like, he could have just sat back down in that bullpen or locker.
I mean, the thing that sticks out to me most about Atlanta, too, is it's talking about beating Houston, because that was a tough team. Houston was a very good team. I think that's obvious. They had good pitching. They had a lot of offense, great situational hitting. The thing they did was they would score early and then keep adding on. I think Wednesday night's game was a great example of it, where other teams have tried to beat Houston, like the White Sox. I talk about the Game 4 when Gavin Sheets hit the home run, and then that was all their offense. To beat Houston, you have to be able to keep piling on runs, and Atlanta just did a great job. Their offense just always was able to get the hits when they mattered most, and that great situational hitting is what I think got them there.
Yeah, the Braves... I like we said, I was shocked that they won. But when you look at the team and, like, look at how they were playing, should not be a huge surprise that they were able to go this far. And you, Joe, you mentioned Jorge Soler, his home run in Game 6. That was a moonshot.
That one was just gone.
That
forever.
Was and when he hit that home run, you knew that that team was going to win.
Yeah,
like that's not a home run that you hit in a losing effort.
And but, like talking about them though, as a team, and no one expected. Like this was a team that went to 7 games last year in the NLCS against the Dodgers. Like,
yeah,
this is a team that. Maybe this year didn't have it all. They lost some players, like that whole Marcell Ozuna thing, too. And,
yeah.
like, that all happened. And now they come back again, get to the NLCS again, and this time they get to the World Series. And once again, people are still writing them off. Like, not writing them off, I would say, but people just weren't expecting them to win.
Yeah, and, you know, on the other side of things, Houston was probably the heavy favorite. And, you know, people want to dance on Houston, but I respect as much as I hate saying
that, the
team that beat the White Sox, I respect what they've been able to do.
Like,
they've made it to, what, 3 World Series in 5 years with, you look at the roster compared to 2017, compared to the one that just lost on Wednesday night, or Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very different roster. They've been able to have player turnover, have still been able to develop talent while they've been winning games. I think that's very impressive what they've done from an organizational standpoint. Regardless of what you feel about the cheating scandal, I think it is impressive that they were back at that point, because we talk about in baseball that it's one of the hardest sports to continually make the World Series, and Houston's done a pretty good job of it.
And you touched on it a little bit. I was just going to say that no matter how impressive this feat is of making the World Series 3 times in 5 years and the success they've had, it'll always be marred by that cheating thing. Because even now, like, you see so many people still regard them as cheaters and still hold that over them. And so you're absolutely right, like, not to dance on their grave or whatever, but it's kind of nice. It's almost cathartic for a lot of people to see them lose.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to be able to shake that for a while.
And
they're still going to be back.
They're still going to be back.
They still have room. Like, Correa might be gone, but, I mean, maybe they're probably just going to plug him right in with someone else with a big free agency class.
But still, the way I think about it is, yes, maybe they were cheating. Were they the only team doing it? Probably not.
Definitely.
But look at how they've performed since being exposed. That, yes, they were probably cheating, but the pieces were in place already. Like, they had good players and stuff, and now it's being shown that these guys can still play baseball, even if they're not necessarily cheating. I think Altuve was still producing, Carlos Correa, and then they've been able to still develop talent, and they've been able to make it to a World Series with a different manager than A.J. Hinch. I think that says a lot about what they have in place as an organization, that even if they did win the World Series with the outside factors going in, they were still doing a lot of things outside of that right in the organization.
So, Joe, you mentioned it, the huge free agent class coming up this offseason. I want to know what you're thinking, because we haven't really talked about this. What are some moves, and who are some guys that you could see going to certain places?
I mean, Leo and I were talking a little bit, but for the Cubs, it's going to be Jed Hoyer came out to start talk about pitching. That's really what they need. After especially their bullpen. Well, yeah, I mean, everyone needs pitching. I mean, obviously, but the Cubs, like, they got Hendricks on there, and then other than that, you're just like, what are we even looking at? There's a good amount
What about Jose Quintana?
Quintana's in, remember, no, he's gone.
No, because I'm pretty sure they traded.
Don't make me even say anything. I could go about Craig Kimbrough right now.
That's
how
the only
do?
Shot I'm taking. That's the only shot.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a bunch of like free agents at the pitching. Like, Marcus Stroman's one of them that the Cubs have always been linked to, like, for 3 years. And he's still a guy who's not really gotten to, I guess, what his potential was set at from a couple years before. And, of course, you could go, like, Verlander, you could go Greinke and Scherzer and Kershaw, who are free agents. But, like, Cubs are definitely not going to that route. Those are guys that are going right away
top
contender,
dollar,
like, top dollar. But Cubs could be in, like, a certain spot for someone like a Marcus Stroman, I think. That would be
like
ideal signing at the pitching, I would think, for the Cubs.
And you kind of talk about that. I don't think the Cubs are going to be spending maybe for some of the top free agents, because they're not one free agent away from being World Series contenders. They need, you know, 2-3 guys and maybe some more organizational depth. So if they could go get a guy like Stroman on, like, a team-friendly contract, maybe a bridge deal or something, that could be a good pickup for them. And I think it's also worth noting that their new GM, Carter Hawkins, comes from the Cleveland Guardians system, and they are just great at developing pitchers, finding pitching in unexpected places. So if you're putting an emphasis on pitching, which the Cubs have seemingly been doing for
the past five years, in the draft too.
Carter Hawkins is probably going to help do that, and it'll be interesting what kind of moves he makes, because it felt like in previous years the Cubs always tried to go maybe think too smart with their free agent signings. They signed guys like Brandon Morrow, who just was never healthy, or other just various different pitchers. Yeah. And I didn't seem to pan out. But now that they have someone who's a bona fide pitching expert, that could certainly help them.
We're just like a year, year and a half away from a Cubs having a $200 million plus payroll. And now it's just way below that mark right now. And also they were talking about Hoyer and the new GM. They're talking about how they want to spend their money. They want to be a lot smarter than what they've been to. They don't want to have any like major contracts. So, I mean, the Cubs, I think, are going to have – they were saying that they want to be more like the Rays – and kind of being like these low, cheaper things, and like, but not too cheap, and you're still going to get these high quality players from their system, and also in the free agency as well.
And I think that that's an admirable goal, right? To find
everyone else,
find all these guys who are really good, and you can pay them just a very little amount
of money.
Ball, exactly. And that's nice to think about. And the Cubs are in a really nice position where they don't necessarily have any of these guys who they have to shell out huge money for right now, so it gives them a little leeway. What do we want to do? Do we want to really try to build through our farm system and develop a lot of these players, or make a splash in free agency? And instead of signing one guy to this huge deal, sign three guys to a deal where it's the player's not going to be quite as good. But the Cubs do have a really nice situation where they have a lot of money and a lot of freedom to do what they want with it.
I mean, like, even I guess not with the Braves, but like, kind of how the Braves did, like, just bring in some other guys in free agency that maybe aren't top dollar, and then also got the free agents, or excuse me, the trades, just bring in other guys that are kind of just going to be able to put you into the playoffs and do something maybe, and you never know what will happen when you produce like that.
And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they spend that money and maybe move into the other team in Chicago, the team that is, let's face it, one or two pieces away from being that legitimate contender, the White Sox. Joey, as our resident White Sox meatball, where do you think they should spend the money they have, or what's your position of need? Who is the player you're targeting this offseason?
See, the problem is, I think when this roster is completely healthy, it is very, very solid. I think this year we saw a lot of holes because of injury, but I think that you really just need to shore up that who's going to be that DH. Because there were a lot of guys trotted out in that
DH right fielder role.
Exactly. And there were a lot of guys who they were kind of subbing in and out of that role, but none of them really seemed to stuck. And you have Gavin Sheets, who's a candidate for that, and we saw him have a little postseason success, but it feels like it's been very limited. And I don't know. The bullpen and the rotation right now are super solid, and it's really I can't even think of I can't think of like an area of need for the White Sox pitching wise, because the starting five is, or the starting rotation is really, really solid, and I think Dylan Cease, given some development, will really fill out that five player role. And then the bullpen, I hated that they traded Cody Hoyer to the Cubs, cuz I was a really big fan of his, but like Craig Kimbrell and Liam Hendricks, even though Kimbrell kind of got shelled this year, I think he'll be back in form.
Right. Do you think you bring back Kimbrell, though?
Even if we don't, we have Liam Hendricks, so that's not a thing that I'm too concerned about. But, Leo, you're absolutely right in that right field DH area, and that's no hate on Adam Engel, but I think that the Sox need someone who can really be like a spark plug offensively, because they lacked that a little bit this season.
And what maybe annoys me about the Sox is, I think we can already tell you how it's going to go this offseason, is they're not going to address that position of need, because they're going to tell you that we have Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets and Adam Engel and all these prospects that they could put out there. I want to see them go out, get a Nick Castellanos, but it's been my dream for offseasons, many offseasons now, get Chris Bryant, put him in right field. That won't happen, but if you go get somebody to put in that right field spot or that second base spot, in addition to the prospects you already have, that's how you develop a good team, is by having a plethora of bats and a plethora of good players you have, the overabundance of riches. Those are teams that go to the playoffs consistently. Yeah.
And that's what the Sox thought they had until half of the lineup gets hurt, and then all of a sudden you realize that maybe the depth isn't what you thought it was, and some of these young players, like Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets and Nick Madrigal, who you're bringing up, aren't quite ready for that expanded role yet.
And one thing is, like, the pitching, too. Like, it doesn't every year, pitching goes up and down. Carlos Rodon might be a free agent. Obviously, the bullpen, there's a couple of guys, too.
You might potentially need two new starting pitchers. If you don't know,
Lance Lynn, I mean,
Dallas Keuchel's kind of spent. Yeah, I mean, let's face it, I don't think I want him in my starting rotation next year. And then Carlos Rodon, it's a tough decision what to make about him. And we'll have plenty of time this offseason to get more into that.
So much time.
But we're a little cut for time now. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, Cameron Kelly is going to join the show. And we're going to be talking about some payment amongst college athletes. That's coming up next on The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Hey, this is Katie Weimerskirch, and you're listening to The Red Zone.
Welcome back to The Red Zone here. Leo Sauter, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kenny, and now Cameron Kelly joins the show. And last time, or we've had her on another time since, but last fall we had Cameron on to talk about the debate, whether college athletes should be paid or not. And we talked about a lot of important things. We discussed name, image, and likeness, maybe a uniform stipend for athletes. And now, you know, fast forward a year since, some legislation's been put into place. Name, image, likeness is something college athletes have to benefit from, and we're in a whole new world of college athletes. So it's kind of fun that now we're getting to reflect on that show and now talk about that new world that we're in now.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. And, of course, yeah, it's really interesting because I feel like we didn't have the right words for what we were talking about last time. We're like, they should just get paid. But now we have the NIL, which is name, image, and likeness, as you said, Leo. And last time I was here, we were talking about how athletes go through a lot mentally and physically here on campus or at any other campus because they have classes, but then sometimes they're practicing twice a day, which is
crazy.
A lot physically. So sometimes it's kind of like, should they be compensated for something like that? Because they do more than the average student.
Definitely. And I agree. And we were, remember you guys, I wasn't on the show at that point. It was the semester before, but you guys, I remember, were talking about how the athletes would be getting paid. And at first it was like, will they be getting paid like minimum wage and everything? And like, as of right now, it's mostly through endorsement deals. So it is kind of interesting to see, like, how this is all going to start going through, because this is just, like, the first year of everything. And, like, it's always going to – there's going to be more and more probably added on every year, and maybe even taken off just because some stuff might pop up with everything.
And I don't think that there's a path through the NCAA that will ever allow, like, universities themselves to pay players just because I think that creates
so much money.
So much.
And it creates such an uneven power balance between schools. Like, Alabama's going to be able to pay their entire 53-man roster.
But also, like, they can also kind of do that with, like, boosters who own a car dealership.
Oh, yeah. No,
like,
that's the thing that also happens
yeah, with bigger schools. Boosters, like, even, like, U of I compared to ISU, like, it's a lot bigger school, like a Power 5 school as well, like, brings in all these big recruits and everything, and they do have advantages like you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like boosters and bag men. Like, those things exist at big schools to benefit athletes, but those are all kind of like under-the-table deals and stuff like that. But I don't think a university is ever going to be able to come out and write a player a check for playing on their football
team. And that's the thing we kind of talked about last show. If you... And we've talked in other classes here at Illinois State, we talked about it. Tom LaMonica's sports communication class, we've had people come in and talk about it. It's an interesting dilemma here. If you wanted to have a uniform wage for all student athletes, that funding would have to come from some of the other revenue in Illinois State athletics.
Oh, yeah.
And that revenue is, so let's face it, the revenue from the football and the basketball programs basically pays for all the other sports. So then if you start taking up some of that money, you might have to say goodbye to the swimming program or to tennis or something, one of the programs that generates less revenue.
Exactly.
So if you start cutting that up, you're maybe unintentionally taking away some of the opportunities from other student-athletes. So I think it's just better now with the NIL that some of this money is out in the open, that there's not as much – there's probably still under-the-table stuff going on. Let's be real here. But now student-athletes can go out and start earning legitimately and can have some opportunities that they didn't have a year ago.
And the NCAA was just offering, you know, that free education for athletes. You know, they get that full ride and all that stuff. But it's nice to hear that they are going to have a chance to get these endorsements. And like you said, Joey, we were kind of talking about with that power. It's like, well, if you're going to pay all the athletes, like, you can't just specifically just play, like, pay the basketball players.
Exactly.
And not, like you said, Leo, like the divers. Like, you're going to probably have to cut that sport off.
And it just feels like they were just so, like athletes couldn't do anything. College athletes couldn't have a YouTube channel. College athletes can't just, like... It was kind of crazy to think about how all these restrictions, I remember people were trying to have like YouTube channels and everything, and Donald De La Haye, he used to be kicker at UCF in Florida, and this was like one of the first people that really started to get things going. Like, he was one of the best kickers in the nation, and he had a YouTube channel, and he finally made like money off ads, and he got kicked right off and everything.
And I had the opportunity this summer with my internship to work around college baseball players, get to talk to them about some of this stuff, and some of the guys were saying that they... have in the past have had to turn down endorsements or opportunities to be brand influencers on social media and stuff. We had our starting center fielder, A.J. Wright, who plays at Northwoods University, a D2 school. So you probably think there's not much money to be made for a Division II center fielder. But he had a TikTok account where he just had over 100,000 followers. And so he's been having, you know, brands reach out, say, like, place this product in your video. And he wasn't able to do that until now this summer. Now he's been able to do that and been able to monetize his brand. And because he was upfront with us this summer, he said, I probably don't have a future in professional baseball, but if I can make a little money off of my platform, off of my brand while I'm still in college, this could, you know, help me out.
And you're right about that, because there's so many TikTok stars that are like basketball players.
Yeah.
There's this one girl, I don't know what school she goes to, but her name is Sedona, and everyone's obsessed with her. And she's on TikTok, and then she's like, oh, I'm so happy that NIL is now like passed, and I can get money off of things. And it's if your talent is there, people are definitely going to support you as well.
Yeah. And so with J.B. Pritzker signing that law in June, do you think that this is going to kind of draw more students, or more athletes, student athletes, I should say, both? They're both.
There you go. You got
it. Students first before athletes. That's what everyone always says. But do you think that might draw more players to Illinois, like, to have these endorsement deals?
I mean, I think that it's a very attractive thing, and I don't know if we'll see a huge influx right away. I think it's the kind of situation where other high school athletes are going to gauge where they want to go based on what schools are bringing in endorsement revenue for their athletes, because obviously there are more people that pay attention to these Power Five schools than Group of Five schools or lower schools. So if you have the opportunity, maybe the program isn't as good like itself. So like if you want to go
Illinois State basketball.
Yeah, exactly. So like you could
play
like at Illinois State basketball. Or you could go play
men's basketball, not the women's.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Men's basketball. Or you could go play for the Illini.
Mm-hmm.
And the Illini, better program, but what if Illinois State players are drawing in more money? Will that have an influence on where these players want to go?
And I think so, because this is a state school, and we get that money, you know, here at Illinois State University.
I think it's just everything's under the microscope right now. I don't think anyone knows how this is going to take off, how different schools are going to be able to handle it. So I think it comes down to the universities almost have to make sure you have someone in place, maybe an outside firm. Or I just, again, talking to some of these guys over the summer, they didn't really know what their rights were, what was up with it, or what they could do and what couldn't do. And
like,
so I think the universities have to not hold their hands a little bit, but read the language here and figure out what you can do, what you can't do legally.
And it seems so weird to me because, you know, we all have experience interviewing these student athletes, right? And going through sports information directors, going through the SIDs to get these interviews, because the universities have them so closed off.
Yeah.
They want to do everything they can to protect these student athletes. I feel like that is a step that's going to be taken very soon by a lot of these schools, is having someone in place.
Because I understand right now, you know, a brand can just, or Avanti can just go into an athlete's DMs. They could just message them with no going through the university, and they could just set up whatever they want. And I think that puts the athletes in a tough spot because, like I was saying, these guys don't necessarily know what they can say yes to, what they can say no to, if they are stepping into something they shouldn't be.
And that's no knock on the athletes. This whole system is
just
so
nobody knows what's going on.
On to that, like the safety and protection, like some of these athletes at the big-time schools, they're getting paid like a lot of money, like a lot of money. And like as someone who – a lot of these people are teenagers, so it's like – do these kids have people that are mentoring them or helping them with everything? Because, I mean, as a kid, you kind of do some dumb things. So, I mean, like, what if you spend all your money away and then, like, what if you don't make it to the next level and you thought you were going to be all this and everything? Like, it's just, it's scary. It's a scary opportunity because, I mean, all at once, something could happen and you never know.
It is scary.
All these people getting so much money at such a young age.
Right, and NCAA also has, like, a couple, like, of things that they think that these athletes should do, as in, like, getting an agent. But it's, like, as you're saying, Joe, like, are we going to be for sure that this person's going to be fair with them? Because they are so young.
And they're given, like, cars, too, and everything else. It's not just money.
That's my whole thing, is the NCAA tells these athletes, oh, go get an agent, right? And go get yourself representation.
Right.
That's something that should be handled at the university level. For these athletes who commit to these universities, they should have someone in place who can manage, maybe not manage their funds, but manage these opportunities for endorsements and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a set of helpers in place, necessarily either from the NCAA or from the university, so these athletes know what they're signing into, so they're not, you know, maybe necessarily signing into a contract they can't back out of with a brand, and that, you know, offer them courses in money management or fiscality, like, so they know how to spend within their means or what they're how to budget properly. I just think there's so much that we don't know right now, and it's just so crazy.
It even goes to high school. Like, I've seen an article this past week where a high schooler got a deal. Like, it just goes back all the way. Before, I guess you could technically kind of do it as a high schooler, but then you wouldn't be able to do it in college.
Yeah, but I imagine, like, imagine Zion Williamson in high school.
He was already an internet star. Right?
Yeah. So, like, imagine the endorsements he would have, like, going back. And I think a big draw of the NIL and why the NCAA decided to put it forward is, especially in college basketball, you see these stars, and Zion Williamson is the prime example of that. This kid coming out of high school, he was a household name out of high school, and then he goes to Duke for a year, leaves, and that's less revenue for the NCAA. If he can make his bread at Duke and work and make money off of his name, image, and likeness, get himself a shoe deal, maybe he stays at Duke a couple more years, and that brings in more money for the NCAA.
And these group of, like, student athletes are the guinea pigs. Like, they're going to be the trial run to see what's going to happen, and I'm quite sure that the rules are definitely going to change and be fixed based upon this year.
It's like the Wild West right now. Like, no one knows really what's right, what's wrong, and, like, it's like boosters are almost like recruiting kids, because we were talking about it just a couple minutes ago. Like, you're almost like getting recruited in a whole new way that's never happened before. Like, are coaches talking to like boosters and everything? Like, oh, I'm going to talk to this kid. Would you be able to maybe get him like 5K if he shows your brand, if I get him on campus and everything? It's like, is that a thing? Is that even legal? No, is there a rule book? Like, I don't even know, guys.
That's what I don't
What's going on?
We've always known that there's been shady stuff going on with college recruitment and stuff. And now maybe that it's more out in the open, I don't know if it's better or worse, but we're in a brave new world for college athletics, and it's just going to be interesting to see how this evolves. That, because I think when it all comes down to things, this is better for the athletes. They can create their brand. They can profit off of this, that they have more of a control over their image and stuff. But now it's, how do we navigate it? How do we make sure that this doesn't get out of control too soon? It's just going to be very interesting, exciting to monitor the situation.
You're right, Leo. I think there's a lot of pros, like, for the athletes, because of course they get that
more
revenue
pros,
and like I said, like, there might be students who have came from rough lives or backgrounds, so then they're making a better life for themselves as well as their families. But then, like you said, it might get out of control where we're just beyond our limits right now, because like you said, there's no official like rules or exactly this is the structure of NIL.
But I think you hit on the most important thing, and how good this is for the athletes, because sports and your athleticism in your body are not guarantees. And we've seen a lot of great college stars who either get hurt in college and don't make it to the pros at all, or make it to the pros but flame out early.
Yeah.
This gives these athletes an opportunity to monetize themselves while they are at their peak. And I think that is the most important thing that the NIL offers to the NCAA, is you're giving, like you said, maybe some of these athletes who don't come from great financial backgrounds the opportunity to monetize their hard work, even if it doesn't work out professionally.
I get that. And, like, they just show their personalities.
They reward them, yeah.
Yeah, and then I think that that helps them get jobs future, even as, like, sports reporters and stuff like that. Because
not
people,
even, yeah.
Yeah, people are just seeing their personalities.
Yeah, like, not even in, like, sports, too. Like, even going back to, like, kind of the money thing and how to handle your money at a young age, it can be helpful, can be hurtful to you, but like if you do the right thing, you kind of grow up in a quick way. You kind of know how to work with your money. You work a job. If you're playing a college sport, you go to school. So that's a lot to take care of at such a young age, and you keep building things up like that. So it's going to be helpful for people, even if they're not playing professionally or even anything that has to do with sports.
Yeah, it's a whole new situation, and I think we kind of talked about it on the last show how the whole student-athlete thing, it is the full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you are getting that money to go with it. And let's face it, we know athletes, they do end up having to put money into their own performance. You have to buy training equipment. You have to hire a speed coach or a strength coach, stuff to work with. So now that you get, you know, some money to make up for that, it just puts them all in that much better of a situation. So it's trending in the right direction.
And another thing that really excites me,
okay,
NCAA football and basketball video games will be heading back onto the market because of this deal. Apparently they're in the works again. So those were some of the best games, some of us guys. We also we actually like to play a little NCAA football after the show.
I was
Thursday we like to do that, so we like to do that. And then we haven't played the one since NCAA 14, so it's been like 8 years since one came out.
I was about to say, for context, we have a franchise mode where the Illinois State Redbirds are just made up of dudes who work down here at the station.
But
that's
okay,
a good part of it, though.
Talking about the video games, moving back to
it is, though,
real life, too, that's kind of when I felt like things started trending this direction. Was it Northwestern was leading the charge for it? Why they stopped doing the video games? That they wanted to get a piece of that revenue from EA Sports, and then EA Sports just stopped making the games and stuff. And I think it's come full circle at this point where we've seen, now that that started, it's finally came to a conclusion 7 years later, but it's a better place for the student-athletes now because of those athletes
can get
stand
paid.
In. Yeah.
Because now athletes can get paid, the university can get paid, and then EA Sports can all get paid. All three of them are pretty much equally, not equally getting paid, but all three of them will still
or
be
at least
able to
getting
make money.
Some slice
some
of the pie.
Some slice of the pie. Exactly.
Some people will be happy because money makes a lot of people happy, but it can be a lot of confusion with money as well, too.
Yeah, ain't that for sure.
And this has been just such a great segment. It's great that we finally get to see change, that we can talk about something as an idea a year ago, and now we can see a concrete concept. So this was fun to have Cammy back on to reflect on that. We had so much fun that we're going to keep her on for the next segment.
Ooh.
We're playing the pick six when we come back. That's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. Welcome back. Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kenny, and Cameron Kelly. And that sounder means it's time to play the pick six. Joey, why don't you tell our audience how it is we play this game and what the standings are?
Okay, so the way we play this game, Leo, is we pick six NFL games each week, and then after that we see how they go, and we try to pick the winners, and then we keep tally, and then whoever has the best record, whoever has the best record throughout the entire semester gets bragging rights eternally. Last week was...
Forever, though, because we're all seniors here, so whoever wins it, this is forever.
And last week was... an absolute poor showing.
To talk about
by
sad for me.
Me, Mr. Stoddard, sitting to my left, and Steve Cease, our faculty advisor, all went 2-4.
Ooh, come on.
The guest went 3-3, and Joe Kennedy, of course, went 4-2. Joe Kennedy in the lead, tied with the guest.
You know, if I would have been here, I probably would have changed one of my picks, too. Just going to say that.
Oh, okay. Well, and Leo, so Joe and the guest have 29-19 as their record. Leo is in third with 28-20.
I'm right there.
And Leo's right there. And then me and Mr. Cease a couple games back, 25-23.
Well, you never know. You never know. You could come back. You still got a couple weeks.
I'm coming back. I'm headhunting out here.
So let's get right on into it. We'll start with tonight's Thursday night game, the New York Jets at the Indianapolis Colts. I'm going to go with the Colts here. I still think they're a weird team, but I think they're good enough to get the win tonight against Mike White and the Jets.
I'm going to ride with the hot hand. I'm going Mike White.
Oh, my God. You're going to go.
He was electric last week. He beat the Bengals last week. And I have to gain ground somewhere, and I think this is the place
to do it.
This
is the hill you're choosing to die on, Joey.
All right, Joey.
I have to be like Leo. I'm going with the Colts
all
this
right. one. Good call, Cammy. Way to do that. Great call right there. I think Colts definitely going to take hopefully an easy one. But I do have Mike White on my fantasy squad tonight, so hopefully he puts out.
Joe's hoping for an absolute shootout between
White
two
night,
under
baby.
500 teams.
Joe will give us his complete fantasy lineup later in the show. But moving into our second game, we have the Cleveland Browns at the Cincinnati Bengals. It's a Sunday at noon game. I'm going with the Browns here. Even with some of the problems they had, I think they're just a deep enough team that they should be able to take down the Bengals here.
And I do want to say Steve Cease picked the Colts too.
I think that the Bengals are going to have a rebound after a bad loss to the Jets last week. They are a good team. Joe Burrow is the real deal, and so is Ja'Marr Chase. And the Browns have been so up and down this season. All this Odell drama in the locker room now.
Yeah, that's weird.
I think that team's in shambles. I'm going with the Bengals.
I'm going with the Bengals, too, because
Let's
I looked at the
Cammy.
Record, and they're kind of close, so I'm just going to go with the Bengals. Because they're just so close, okay?
With all this Odell Beckham stuff going on, a lot of drama, both teams really struggling. Bengals... top of the division still, I believe, though. But I think the Browns, this is a must win with them. They need to make it, so I'm going Browns.
And
Steve Cease
is also going with the Browns here. Moving into our next one, this is where we're going to get really weird here with the New England Patriots at the Carolina Panthers. I don't even know what to pick with this one. This is two teams that just confuse me. Maybe I'll go with the Patriots here just because They got the better coach here. I've said some good things about Sam Darnold on this show before, but I don't know what to make of him anymore. Maybe it was the Jets. Maybe it was him. I'm just going to roll with the Patriots here, I think.
Leo's absolutely right. I have no idea. And I was the one that suggested this game, too, and that was a dumb decision by me.
Yeah, way to go.
Yeah, I really sewered us all. I'm going to go with the Patriots, too, because they beat the Chargers last week, and that's kind of impressive.
Me, three, the Patriots. I have to, my dad's a diehard Patriots
fan.
Okay, I see him. He's moved on, but I mean, like, he has all the merch, so I have to say.
You know, I got to give the shout out to Rocky,
Rocky
Kelly.
Rocky Kelly
gets the big shout out. Rocky, I hope you're listening.
Yeah, this is for you.
Guys, last time Sam Darnold played against the Patriots team, he saw ghosts. So I got to go with the Patriots in this one because there might be some more ghosts out there for Sam Darnold.
Steve's also going with the Patriots, so it's a sweep for the New Englanders. Right. This one, another one that could be a bit tricky here, it's the Minnesota Vikings at the Baltimore Ravens. I said before that I just am not sold on the Ravens yet, but I think the Vikings are bad. And I'm going to go with the Ravens here because I think they just have that explosive dynamic to their offense that I think they'll be able to pull away here.
These are two teams that I just am not convinced are good, and the Ravens just have a better record. I don't think the Ravens are good. Oh, man, I don't want to pick with Leo because I need to gain ground, but I cannot in good faith pick the Vikings. I just can't.
This isn't the game to do it.
It's not the game to do it. I already picked Mike White. I'm not going with Kirk Cousins, too. I'm going to go with the Ravens.
I'm going to pick the Ravens because their colors are kind of cute, so.
You know, I really want to take the Vikings, but the Vikings wins. I know you want me to, and everyone is not taking them, but their wins aren't against good teams. I mean, the Seahawks, I guess, all right. Like, three not great wins. And
yeah.
Ravens are passing the ball a lot more with Lamar and everything. I got to go Ravens still. I'm sorry.
And Steve's going with the Ravens, too. So another sweep here.
Another sweep.
But this one might be a bit more divisive because it's the Tennessee Titans going through a bit of an identity crisis right now with Derrick Henry out for the year. Adrian Peterson's joining the club. And then they're visiting at the Los Angeles Rams, who have been very impressive this year. I'm going to go with L.A. I think maybe eventually the Titans will be able to overcome this Derrick Henry injury, but this isn't going to be the week. They're still got to find out what their team is now, and this is going to be a tough one for them.
I'm so mad because this game would have been so good.
Oh, yeah. If Henry
so good with Derrick Henry in. But without him and with the addition to Von Miller to that Los Angeles defense, it's going to be a routing for the Rams. I think they take it easily.
I got to go with the Rams because they only got one loss, y'all. Just one.
Cammy knows how to play this game.
I know how to play, guys.
Cammy's chalking it, and she's going to go 6-0.
She's in the line for a 6-0 week, I think. But, I mean, the Titans' secondary is also, like, the worst secondary, I think, giving up points in NFL. And you look at the Cooper Kupp, the Rams, Matthew Stafford having almost an MVP-type year right now. And I think, Leo, the Von Miller thing, they got two of the best pass rushers in the NFL, plus Jalen Ramsey, a couple other guys in that secondary, and just everyone on that offense with the Rams. So I'm going Rams. I think it still might be a close one. Might be interesting to see how Ryan Tannehill does now that Henry's gone. Like, maybe he's going to actually have a... last year he even did really well, but like with Derrick Henry gone and A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, like... maybe something interesting is going to happen with that squad still.
Yeah,
but I'm going Rams.
I think they have the foundation there that they could still do some good things without Henry, but we'll see. And moving into our last one, this is going to be maybe fun, maybe horrible. We'll see. It's the Monday night game. It's the Bears at the Steelers. Oh, man. I've talked myself into the Bears last week. Didn't go so well. This week, I think, will be different because I think the Steelers are bad. I think the Bears... this is a game they should be able to win here. I think they're going to take it on Monday Night Football, on national TV. I'm going with the Bears here.
Meatball Leo, 2 weeks in a row.
Yes!
Wow. Oh, I'm so excited. I love Meatball Leo. You already know what I'm picking. This is the easiest pick of my life. The Steelers are...
really?
Buns.
Oh, I thought you were going to pick them.
No!
No?
Of course, Joe, I have picked the Bears every single week. To my detriment. I am in last place. To my detriment, I pick the Bears every single week. And I do not care because this is going to be a win. Justin Fields, I'm calling it right now, 2 touchdown passes instead of the 1.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to have to go with the Steelers because my dad says anybody but the Bears. So
I take back the nice shout-out I gave to Rocky Kelly earlier in the show.
Guys, I really wanted to take the Bears here, but now both of you are taking them. And I kind of want to go the opposite.
Joe, you're in the lead.
It's like I know, but it's like Big Ben's like can't throw the ball anymore.
Yeah.
It's just... I'm going to go Steelers, too. Just to make it interesting. I mean, it'll be helpful or it'll be hurtful. So either way, makes things interesting between us.
I mean, we have the a split now with the Steelers and the Bears. So this will be interesting. And Steve Cease is going with the Steelers as well. And that's just about all the time we have here on this week's Red Zone. This show flew by.
We did.
Maybe a little too excited going in, but I think it went all right.
The hype brought it through.
Yeah, we'd like to thank Cameron Kelly for coming on and talking
about
a very fun issue.
Me.
Oh, yeah.
Always fun when we get the news people to come in and do some sports. It was great to have her on. If you missed any part of tonight's show, we talked about the MLB. We talked about Redbird volleyball and football to start things off all over the place right now. But then we talked about the MLB. We talked about the college athletes and the NIL, and we wrapped things up with the pick six. If you missed any part of tonight's show, you can check it out in podcast form on WZND.com. Just a reminder to tune into our three broadcasts this weekend: volleyball Friday night at 5:50, football Saturday at 11:50, and volleyball Saturday night at 5:50. Thank you very much for listening to another edition of The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Have a great weekend, everybody.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.